Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Today we're talking about something that most women don't typically talk about, but so many are silently living with. So pain during sex, little to no libido, urinary issues, dryness, burning, and feeling dismissed by doctors. It's called genitourinary syndrome of menopause, and it can happen during perimenopause, menopause, or even while breastfeeding. Dr. Helen Stearns is here to break it all down. What is happening in the body? Why it's just not in your head? How to heal, reconnect, and reclaim that intimacy again? Quick shout out to Dr. Bradley Nelson and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship. And to our audience and our fans, please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. It's really good to see you again, Helen. How are you doing?
You too, Lisa. Very good. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good too, minus the whole nicotine withdrawal I was telling you about earlier. Quit about 18 days ago, and it's hard.
It's very hard. It's one of the hardest addictions to break. So I'm super proud of you. And yeah, aww, really shout out for you. Yeah.
Thank you. I think it ties along perfectly with the topic today. Because when, as a woman, our hormones start changing and all these things start happening to the body. Just like with the nicotine withdrawal, like my brain is essentially rewiring itself. And when we're going through hormonal changes, like we don't know what's happening, how long it's going to take before we feel better, what to do to feel better. And that can be really incredibly challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. Not knowing there's an end in sight, not knowing if you're ever going to feel like yourself again, so distressing. This is why, like, I feel like knowledge is power. Why this is my mission is like to educate and empower women, right? Just knowing that there's answers. Sometimes, like, not that that's like good enough, but sometimes just knowing that you feel heard and seen and that there's answers, that can be so healing in and of itself.
Yeah. So today we're talking about the vagina, essentially, and the different changes that women go through as they're in menopause, approaching menopause, outside of menopause. That's difficult. So I know a lot of women are going through like painful sex, and never mind not having sex at all because they don't feel like they want to have sex. Why is all this happening? Like, why do so many women experience this and assume it's just aging or all in their head?
Yeah, or that it's just normal, right? This is actually one of my favorite subjects in the whole world. I know that sounds
The
funny,
vagina?
but the whole like genitourinary syndrome, because it's so, most of the time, and I know this is going to be a huge generalization, but most of the time it's very easy to treat. And this is what makes it so, so powerful to talk about, because many, many, many women are suffering with like what you talked about is either low libido, but let's specifically focus on the vulva and the vagina for most of this episode is, and we'll dive into the science and the pathophysiology and then like what the treatments are and what can really fix this. So I want it to be, again, like everything we've talked about so far, is I want it to be a message of hope by the end, that you walk away, listeners, knowing that there's treatments, knowing that there's even very easy treatments, and there's practitioners that can help you. So when we talk about genitourinary syndrome of menopause, this is an umbrella term for what happens in our vulva and our vagina and our urinary system. What happens when our hormones start declining, right? Particularly estrogen, but also testosterone and progesterone. Estrogen is going to be our big player here. So I didn't bring any graphics. I usually like to actually pull up a big screen because in this subject, graphics can be very helpful in just showing women what happens to our tissue, but we'll just go ahead and describe it. So, without estrogen, our vagina walls become much thinner, much drier with decreased blood flow. With decreased blood flow comes not as many nutrients. The pH balance changes. And if you're a woman, you generally are somewhat aware of how important the pH is in our vagina, right? If it gets off too much, that predisposes us to infections or smells, overgrowth of bacteria. So this is what's happening in our vaginas without estrogen is it starts to get really dry. The pH changes. The dryness and the pH changes then cause atrophy. And we all hate that term, right? But it really literally causes atrophy.
What does
It
that mean?
causes like a shrinking and a dryness of the tissues. So for some women, this can mean that the entrance and even the walls of the vagina become so stiff and small that, like sex can become very painful. Even just walking or the rubbing of your underwear or your jeans on your like vulva can become very painful. It can hugely interfere with quality of life. Furthermore, when we live without estrogen for a period of time, and I saw this all the time, all day, every day, treating geriatric women, is that it changes our urinary system in huge ways. So the urethra starts tunneling a little bit outwards and it loses its elasticity, which means that you're not able to hold your pee quite as much, right? And also, there's changes in the bladder and the rest of the urinary system that can cause us to have to pee a lot. So many women think that it's normal for you to have to get up two, three, four, five times at night, right? That is not unheard of in this population. This is not normal. It's common, but it's not normal. Neither is it normal to be leaking after you sneeze or cough. And many women have been told, well, that's just what happens after you have a baby, right? Like, just get used to it. You'll have to wear a little panty liner. And no, like, there are real treatment options, and what's happening to you is not normal. That tissue should be plump and healthy and moist. And the other thing that can happen, and why we see these changes in lactating women, is when you give birth and you're breastfeeding, your body takes a huge plummet in estrogen. So you go from about 3, 4, 5,000 markers of estrogen in your blood to just almost nothing. And so for prolonged periods of lactation, like I know for me, this don't judge, but I breastfed my child for 3 years because she was obsessed and she just loved it. And, but it, I definitely could feel the dryness. And so, I've been talking a lot. Do you have any questions before we talk more about treatment options or?
No, I just know that a lot of women who are older in my life, they just talk about the urinary stuff, especially as if it's like normal. So my aunt raised my cousin, and they were like racing. And after she was done racing, she's like, "I just peed myself. I have to go change." And it was like normal, and like just like it was whatever. It happens when you get older. And I was like, "What? Like, what just
You're like, oh,
happened?"
is
You
that what
know,
I have to look forward to? Oh my God, like,
literally. But I will say this: it was like 3, 4 years ago, and I went to a trampoline park. And I haven't had kids. I'm only 41, so I would have been in my late 30s. And I was jumping on these trampolines, and I peed a little. And I was like, "What is happening?" So yeah, this is interesting to me to understand what is actually going on in the body, and that it's very treatable. Like, we don't have to live this way.
And the second cause of some of these urinary changes or the leakage or some of the vaginal sexual pain is not even all hormone related. It can be both and it can be either or, but a lot of women have their pelvic floor muscles are either too tight or too loose or off a little bit. And this is why pelvic floor therapy is something many, many women have never even heard of, don't know what it is. They aren't prescribed it. I know no one even offered it to me after I had my child. Every woman, as a standard of care, should be offered pelvic floor therapy after they have a child, no matter if it's a C-section or a natural vaginal birth. Because there are things that can get really off, and your muscles have been so deconditioned by the time you go through like 9 months of pregnancy and you have that baby just sitting on everything, right? And this is why, like, I have really very intentionally spent time networking and finding pelvic floor therapists in my area that I can refer my patients to, because I'm not a pelvic floor therapy. And if therapist, and if you tell me that you're having sexual pain, yes, I can prescribe a topical cream, which we'll talk about, but you may also need pelvic floor therapy to loosen up these muscles. And they do like a whole evaluation, and they're just some of the best practitioners on the planet, I think. They're just amazing. But yeah, so if one thing that I think, like you talked about, is getting dismissed by doctors, but even before getting dismissed, is these issues are just completely ignored. Like, have you ever been to a doctor and had them ask you if you're having sexual pain?
Yes, I well, no, actually, pain and it. Well, actually, yeah, they
Oh,
asked me
that's
if I'm
good.
having
Yeah.
pain in intercourse, yeah, but only because I have like, when they do the physical and they insert the speculum, I'm just really bad at going to the doctor. So when she inserted it, I was like, ah, like kind of like clenched up, and she's like, do you have pain during sex? Because she thought I was actually in pain, but it was really just mental. So that would have been why, because she saw signs of me possibly being in pain when she was just inserting the speculum. But I do know so many women who have asked their doctor about being dry, and the doctor just being like, just use more lube.
Or like we talked about on our first episode together, is my patient that had excruciating pain with sex for 10 years. And her doctor's response was just drink a glass of wine before you try to have sex.
Oh,
Like,
right. Yeah.
I mean, to me, it borders on malpractice, right? Like, something is wrong if a man were to say he was having excruciating pain during sex or something wasn't working, we would like all hands on deck to figure out what was going on. But for women, like, why is our sexual response or experience not treated similarly, right? Why is there
Yeah.
this big gap in sexual pleasure functioning? Why is it not taken seriously? And that's a whole episode in and of itself. But
Well,
yeah.
even like I've got this like devil on my shoulder. When you talked about the pain, I was like this stupid joke about like the size of the man's penis. I wanted to go there. And that's like societal like shit like coming into my head and affecting the way I'm thinking about it, right? It's like, oh, I wonder what the man's penis size is. Like, that's
Yeah, but
awful.
it has nothing to do with that at all. So for some
Yeah.
women, they've never, for a lot of different diagnostic reasons, which we won't go into, some women have never been able to use a tampon or have had
Right.
zero sexual experience without pain, and they're scared to talk about it. They're embarrassed to talk about it. They just feel like maybe this is just the way things are, and there's this whole silence around it, in their families and in their communities. And I want to change that. I want to be part of changing that. And so, to get back to like what we can do for sexual pain, what we can do for urinary issues, one of the first things that we're going to do or that needs to be done is actually, it's really a good idea for you to get a physical vulvar exam. It's not always necessary to begin treatment, but at some point it would be good to look at the tissues and see if there's anything obvious, right? And then a lot of what I do as a practitioner of perimenopause and menopause and sexual health is, if you tell me that you're having like increased urinary frequency or increased urinary tract infections or dryness or pain with sex, feeling like things are just like sandpaper, the first thing we can do is put you on a localized estradiol cream. This is a cream that is safe for 99.9% of women. There's like literally, I think only like one contraindication for it. And this is even safe for breast cancer survivors. It really is not systemically absorbed. This is just to rejuvenate your tissues, fill them up with estrogen again, and this dramatically decreases urinary tract infections. It can dramatically decrease urinary leaking, urinary frequency. And then the second thing, of course, is what we talked about is pelvic floor therapy. So, in conjunction with this topical systemic therapy, these can be absolute game changers, right? If you can imagine the decrease in quality of life with someone who's scared to leave the house because of urinary frequency or leaking, or the impact that the sexual pain has, right? Lube is just not. It's not going to restore the estrogen balance. So it may help with the sexual experience. And I think lube is a really good idea and can be a great tool in the bedroom, but it's not going to restore the health of that tissue, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention, like, oh, how difficult it is when your partner like wants to have sex, and how do you communicate that to your partner when it like hurts and you feel shame and guilt about it.
Yeah, this is where I think it actually can be really good if the woman feels comfortable and wants it to happen. But to it can be really powerful to have your partner come with you to some of these visits and to be talking about things and to hear that it is not them rejecting you. It is that this is very real physiological changes. And you can just see like the stars exploding in some of these partners' brains when they realize the amount of pain and agony that their partners have been in. It can be a really profound and even a very bonding and healing thing for the partners to hear this together and to hear that there's a real physical reason why she's saying no, or that when she tells you she's in pain, it's real and you need to believe her. I've seen that happen, and I think the woman has to want it to happen for him to be there, but yeah, that can be a really powerful thing.
Yeah. So what are some simple things that women can do if they're already starting to feel that way?
Yeah, very good question. So, if you're starting to have changes in your vulva and your vagina, and you're noticing that, whereas before maybe you never needed lubrication with your partner, but now you are, like you don't have to live with this dryness. And at the first sign of any changes, you can ask for the estradiol cream. You can ask for an exam and let your provider know that you're having these changes. And don't just settle for an answer like use more lube, because your body, I'm a firm believer that your body is always talking to you. Your body is sending
Yep.
pain signals or signals of discomfort for a reason. Like our bodies take care of us, right? They're trying, they're screaming at us, something's not right. So honor your body. And at the first sign, as soon as you can treat it, the easier it is to treat, the more effective the treatment can be. So if you wait till you're actually having like excruciating pain or you're having like real urinary changes, it can take a long time for those tissues to get restored. So I would say at the first sign of any changes, seek expert help.
So even like for me, when I jumped on that trampoline, like, is that a sign that I should be going to get checked out?
It can be a sign, yes, that you're having some pelvic floor dysfunction. So it may not be a sign that you need any kind of estrogen therapy, but that it's more muscular for you. So a good pelvic
Right.
floor therapist will do a manual exam, actually, and they'll see if you're either too tight or too loose, what is happening. Like a lot of constipation actually is pelvic floor dysfunction. And it's not all about just doing Kegels. And so many women are told, like,
I
just
was
do
just gonna
Kegels.
say, Kegels. Yeah, I started
Yeah,
doing
and
it actually.
Kegels are great for women that need it, but you can actually be doing yourself a disservice if you're already too tight and then you're doing Kegels. That can make it that can make it worse. And so seeing a really good pelvic floor therapist can be profoundly helpful and insightful.
So I had a friend, or have, she's not dead, she's still alive. I have a friend that she's just told me that she doesn't like sex, like at all, like ever. And she's been like that ever since I've known her. Do you think that that's a natural thing, or do you believe that could be hormonal as well?
So that's actually a fantastic question because there is a an official diagnosis called hypoactive sexual desire disorder, and that is a diagnosis that's made when someone is having like low desire for sex. But not just low desire for sex, it has to have a second element. And that second element is if it causes distress to the person. There are plenty of people on this planet that are asexual, and they're happy to be asexual. They have never been interested in sex, they're not interested, or their desire for sex just fades as they get older. And if it does not cause them distress, then it's really not a diagnosis. That's just where they're at, and they're content with that. So, where it becomes an issue, right, is if you once had really high libido and you are noticing as you go through perimenopause and midlife changes that you no longer are interested at all in sex and it's interfering with your sense of intimacy and your relationship with your partner and is causing you distress, then it's something that can be treated. Then it's something that we might say is, I hate to use the word abnormal, right? Because I don't want to put a stigma on it, but it's something that we can actually have a conversation about and then offer you several treatment options. But there's a big difference because I don't want to ever say that someone who is not interested in sex, that there's something wrong with them. It has to cause a level of distress for us to actually say, oh, okay, then it's something that we should probably talk about.
Yeah, I get it. So if she was super sexual and all of a sudden she's not, then that would be concerning. But she could simply just not like sex.
Yeah, some people are just never been interested in it, and they're actually really happy with that decision. And just like there's all different, sexual orientations and genders, and asexuality is a very legitimate one. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I truly do believe that, giving the right person your body is important. And yeah, I just never could understand it because for me myself, I've always just had a really high sex drive. So it's just hard for me to understand, comprehend that someone could have zero interest in sex.
I know, right? And I think also something we haven't talked about at all, and it's something that I wouldn't even say I'm an expert in because I'm not a licensed sex therapist. And I actually think it's important for some of my patients to see a licensed sex therapist. But we haven't talked at all about like the difference between arousal and desire in men and women. Like, arousal happens differently for a woman. And sometimes sexual discomfort can be just simply because we haven't taken the time for our bodies to get aroused enough, right? When we are aroused and we're doing the foreplay and taking time for those tissues to get engorged and lubricated, right? That in and of itself is a very important part of the sexual female response and pleasure. And so we haven't, that's like a really interesting, fascinating topic. And I have a really good friend that it would be kind of fun to pull on and talk about that. And she actually has a big outreach to college age students, just trying to educate about sexual experience. And yeah, it's really good. But I also have sex therapists that I've been networking with because it's an important part of treating women.
It is for sure. And you have to just accept yourself where you're at. And we haven't even talked about the brain, like the brain stimulation for women. I know two things that turn me on are intelligence and boundaries. It's like an aphrodisiac for me. If a man has really amazing boundaries and he's like someone like of authority, I'm like, holy shit, I'm so turned on right now. It has nothing to do with like the physical. It's really emotional and mental, emotional and mental for most women, I feel.
And being in that proper headspace and emotional place of safety, right? Safety is just huge, for allowing our bodies to and our pelvic floor feels so many things, and honoring that, like our I'm not doing the best job describing it, but if we don't feel safe, our pelvic floor is not going to open up either. And
Totally.
it holds memories, and it holds memories of trauma. And I know we didn't give any warning, so I want to be really careful what I say about, like for people who might have a history of sexual trauma. But that the body holds on to those memories. And so that's why like a really good sex therapist can be really invaluable in being part of the treatment plan and circle for some of these ladies.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to mention, like when we're growing up, we're not really taught much about what real sex and intimacy is. So I know like some of my first experiences were super rushed. And so the man like inserted himself into me and I was not even close to being prepared. So it hurt because I wasn't there yet. But that was, I thought that was normal and that was what it's supposed to be like, you know? And so those were traumas that occurred to my body that I was like, oh, I guess I just have to deal with it. So it's like unlearning and relearning what it truly means to connect and be intimate and accept our bodies for what they are and where they're at.
And also, just like there's a wonderful, wonderful urologist. She's a sexual medicine expert. Her name is Dr. Rachel Rubin. She practices out of Washington, D.C., but she has sort of, I think she's the one that coined the term. And I apologize to anybody out there if I've got this wrong, but I think it was her that coined the term the orgasm gap. Like there's just a huge orgasm gap between men who are orgasming regularly and the rates that women orgasm. And there's actually some really interesting data and correlation with how it really speaks along the lines of like the pay gap and the glass ceiling. And there's some really interesting study and parallels that we could make there. But her mission in life is really to end the orgasm gap and really give weight and credence and priority to women's pleasure. And the clitoris, she does a lot of work on the clitoris and helping women with clitoral adhesions and pain and doing procedures and sexual medicine issues. It's a really beautiful thing. And she's just smart as a whip. And
Yeah, that's awesome. Not to mention like the different shapes and sizes of the vagina. Like growing up, all I saw were like in the magazines, like porn and stuff, were these like beautiful, tight little vaginas that had like no meat to them per se. And I always like was like kind of ashamed of my genitals because I'm like, they don't look like that, you know? And then you start to understand that most women's don't look like that.
They're all different and they're all beautiful. I loved this one drawing I had in my office at the sexual medicine clinic. It was like just a simple framed, I think it was like line drawings, but they had like 30 different vulvas and vaginas on it. And they were all different, radically different. And I just thought it was like really neat. And it was neat for patients to come in and see it. And, but I remember before I really was into this space, I was very self-conscious of my vulva because like one of my labias is longer than the other. And I was like, I even asked my gynecologist, I was like, is this okay? Like, is this weird or no abnormal? She's like, oh my God, like you're fine. You're like normal. This is normal. I was like, oh, okay. Because we're all so insecure about our bodies until we realize like, no, everybody, just like our fingertips, everybody's vulva looks different, and they're all beautiful to me anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't have my first like real orgasm from intercourse till I was like in my 30s. And it wasn't from a man, I'll tell you that. It was because I was like, man, I've never had an orgasm from sex, like intercourse. And so I went to a sex shop and I bought this like really expensive vibrator. And I remember walking out with this red bag and I was like so determined to have an orgasm from
Love
the
it.
inside of my body.
I
And I
love it.
did. And it was absolutely amazing. But I hadn't before then. And I thought something was wrong with me.
And actually, very few women, I really honestly don't know the percentage. I've read it before, but very few women can orgasm from just penetrative sex, right? Really, the clitoris is the star of the show. And many men and partners don't understand how to stimulate that. The clitoris, they actually counted the nerves just a few years ago. It's taken us to the 2020s to count the nerves of the clitoris, 30,000 nerves in the clitoris.
Wow.
And it's just, and it's an organ that's just there simply for pleasure. To me, that's just profound and beautiful, right? But yeah, there's a lot that needs to be talked about and understood, and this is why it's important that couples are safe and love that are interested in pleasuring the other person. Because for women, we're not going to just get off on penetrative sex for the most part. There's other things that need to happen.
Yes, and the dryness doesn't have to be there, as we talked about earlier in the show. So where can people find out more information about you and what you do and about all the good things?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can definitely reach me through my website. I have contact forms, and that's at helenstearnsdnp.com. And I believe we'll have that in the show notes. And you can find me on social media, same handles, Helen Stearns DNP. I tried to keep it across the board and simple for people to find me. And yeah, I have also, if you're not in California, which is all that I'm licensed for at this point, I can certainly point you to resources for really great providers in almost all 50 states and Canada. And as far as the estradiol cream, I want to give one more plug. This is very, very safe treatment. This is very affordable medication. And so, if any pharmacy ever tries to charge you a lot of medication for this, you can get it for less than $20. And your provider should know how to prescribe that for you for very, very affordable. I am hoping that in my lifetime or much, much sooner, like in a few years, that we're just going to see it over the counter. That's how safe it is, and that's how available it should be for women. So if you're having changes, consult your provider, find a provider that can give you this treatment because it's very easy and very effective.
Amazing. Do you mind just quickly walking us through the work that you do with your clients and what your goals are when you're working with women?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I see clients primarily through telemedicine at this point, though I would really like to restart brick and mortar. But at this point, I treat midlife women who are suffering with hormone fluctuations. Also, really younger women too that might have PMDD or PMS or struggling with like PCOS. Yes, and so when you see me, we're going to have you fill out a very extensive intake form. I need to know your history and medications that you're on and your family history and current life stressors. And we're really going to dive into that, making sure you're a good and a safe candidate for hormone therapy if that's what you want. I do a lot of decision making. I'm never just going to tell you this is the only option. For almost everything, there's always multiple options. I saw a woman last week. And she just wanted to start with some supplements. She's not terribly symptomatic. And she said, I just want your recommendation on some really good lifestyle like supplements. And she takes really good care of herself. She exercises all the time. She eats well. And so, yeah, I was able to give her just expert advice and recommendations. For someone else, you know, they're a very good candidate for hormones and that's what they want. And so we walk through risk and benefits. We do share decision making. Do you want to try a gel? Do you want to try a patch? Like, what can we do to optimize your lifestyle and really I'm really committed to my patients, right? It's not a one-stop shop either. You get time, and then I want to follow up with you. I want to hormone therapy, it takes time to tweak it. And what works for one woman isn't necessarily going to work for another woman. And what works for you for 6 months, as your body changes, you might need, adjustment in that therapy. So, yeah.
Amazing. Well, thanks for being here today and for talking about all things sex and vagina and
I
all
love
the
it.
things that women don't often talk about out loud.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you. I love having this space to talk to our women about these things. Yeah.
Yes. And if you're a woman out there who's listening, please do not struggle or suffer alone. Get in touch with Helen or check out a bunch of resources that are online, but make sure the doctor that you're working with knows what they're talking about, because there is a lot of noise out there right now. So do your research, but don't suffer. Don't struggle. You don't have to pee your pants when you go for a run.
That's
Until
so
next
true.
time. Yes, take care, everybody.